Hello, listeners. Before we get to this episode, I have a quick announcement to make. I have 5 signed copies of Michael Kostroff's new book, Audition Psych 101, that I'll be giving away. To enter to get one, just take a screenshot of this podcast, share it on social media, and tag me in it. 1 week from now, I'll randomly select 5 names from a hat and message you. I'm Lee Foster on Facebook, which is L-E-I-G-H. LeeFoster123 on Instagram, which is my favorite of them all, and Action_podcast on Twitter. I have been to Michael's workshop when he came to Chicago, and I bought his book as soon as it was published. I think every actor auditioning today should read it. Good luck. I'm Lee Foster. You're listening to Action, the No Bullshit podcast dedicated to the pursuit of acting excellence. Enjoy this episode. Okay, so Lauren Muller, this is exciting to have you on. Why don't you just start by explaining who you are and what you do for a living?
Okay, my name is Lauren Muller. The company is RCM Talent and Management. I am based in Georgia. I am a management company that basically manages film, television, new media, basically any actor that wants to get into the entertainment field. I also rep writers and I also rep stunt people. So I kind of cover the whole gambit, and my actors range from being in Georgia, New York, LA, Chicago, Texas. I think that covers all and Florida. So yeah, that covers a good portion of it.
So how did you get into this business?
I've always enjoyed the entertainment industry for a long time, but I have 5 kids. And so I took a steady job instead of an unpredictable job. And I worked in IT for 30 years. When my youngest child flew the nest, so to speak, I decided it was time for me to do what I wanted to do. So the company I was working for was relocating to a place that I did not want to go. And it kind of was my push to say, okay, go do what you want to do. So I started out by working for an agency and then broke out into my own as an agent, and then realized that management was really where I wanted to be and switched over to management fully last year.
Okay. So what is the difference between being a manager and an agent? This is probably a question you get all the time, right?
Yes. And it's a very good question, because in the Southeast, being management is all new. Everything in the Southeast was agencies, agencies, agencies. So coming and turning around and saying, hey, I want to switch over to being a manager, it's taking adaptability for agents and even casting to understand it here. Whereas in New York and LA, it's very commonplace. The biggest difference is agents' jobs is to seek out the breakdowns, submit their actors for it, get the auditions, let their actors know they have the audition, and then negotiate the contract when they book it. And that's really their job, and they're very good at it. They negotiate the contracts, and that is their focus, which is why they can have 200 actors. A manager's job is to do just that, manage their career. And there are different ones. There are some management companies that manage everything from the career to the finances. And then there's the management companies like I am right now, where we actually manage the career. We establish bigger networks. We try to get in with producers and directors as well as casting directors. We work very, very closely with the agents where possible. The agents will sit there and say, hey, I'm going to this breakdown. Here's where I'm putting them in. These are the things I'm going to need. I know a lot more about my actors because I have more of a one-on-one with them. So I'll know the little nuances. Oh, this one just recently took a karate class, or this one has stunt work but no longer is doing it, but it'll allow us to pitch them better. And then I'll talk to the casting directors, or I'll talk to the producers if I happen to know the producer or the director. We also seek out a little bit more. So we're marketing them. We'll sit there and say, hey, where is it you want to go? Do you want to go film? Do you want to go TV? If that's the avenue, now we have to gain a marketing plan. We have to do goals for it. So I kind of work with them to manage their career. We make decisions together. Look, the agent gave us this. This is just not a project we want to do. It's not going to take us where we want to go. Yes, so we'll put money in the bank, and sometimes you need to do that because the term starving actor is very, very true. But you also are creating a brand. So you need to make sure you stay within that brand by not grabbing everything along the way. That's pretty much, if you understand, did I make sense as far as you understanding the difference between the two?
Yeah, definitely. So where do you come in? So let's say that you're my manager. Okay. Mm-hmm. So my agent, okay. So like as of now, my agent gets me auditions. They let me know when I have an audition. They let me know when I like book jobs. They schedule stuff for me. They negotiate contracts. If you're my manager, where do you come in? At what point?
I come in, here's a good example. We just booked somebody on a recurring role for a series. Now the agent took care of everything and got the contract negotiated. Now I turn around and say, guess what? We need to promote this role. I'll coordinate PR. I'll coordinate them to get certain things out. I'll work with the project's PR department in making sure that our actor is part of their press release, part of their interviews, see if I can bump them up to being part of the whole press package. I will set up my own interviews for them. I will sit there and go, okay, let's make sure you're known locally. Now let's make sure that we get you into the trades. And I make sure that I work with the PR departments of the projects because there's a lot of guidelines that you need to follow that take time. And the agents just don't have that time. That's not their responsibility. Theirs is to get you out there and get you your next audition and to let me know, hey, I'm putting them in for this. You know, what do you think? Or like the other day, one of the agents called and said, look, I know that your actor doesn't have any comedy experience, but I think this would be a good experience. Do you want us to go after getting an interview? And do you have a reel you can put together for them to show that they have the ability to do comedy? So now I step in working with them and say, okay, let me get all the clips together. Let me go to my guy that does a quick edit. Let me get you a quick comedy, bunch of comedy clips that can even be from dramedies. They don't have to be straight out sitcoms and get it over to them. I say, yes, this is a great experience. Probably doesn't have enough to book it, but the experience of getting in front of the casting director, getting to understand, you know, seeing her abilities in the comedy realm, that is where I step in. Now, in certain areas, you don't necessarily have to have both an agent and a manager, and sometimes you're not ready for both. Sometimes an agent is all you really need because you're so green. Most managers don't take developmental actors because there's not a whole heck of a lot to do with them. But sometimes in certain areas, if you don't have an agent, you're having a problem getting an agent, but I see potential in you, I'll take that developmental actor. I'll work with them. I'll show them, look, this is the area you need to work on. Here, go look up some coaches, get recommendations on some coaches to work on your improv, let's say. I'll help develop them to a point where I can still submit them. I have the ability to submit an actor for a project. I'll submit them once we feel that they're at a certain level where I'm going to have things to promote them and to do more than just submit. I will go seeking an agent that I feel best fits them that can take them to the next step of their career. So a lot of times when I get people, they don't have an agent yet because they're not at a point where an agent feels like they can get them jobs. I take them and I make them to the point where they can get an agent and get jobs. So it's a big teamwork. It totally is that old adage of it takes a village. And it does. It takes PR, it takes marketing, it takes your manager to work with and coordinate that and coordinate the agent. And, you know, I am also the one that, like, I'll call up for an awards thing and I'll say, hey, my guy's recently been on three of your shows. I want to get him tickets to be on the red carpet, to be in there. And that's what I do. So it helps build their career while the agent still can focus on getting them in and getting them auditions. So it's kind of a gray area of, you know, do you take someone that needs an agent and develop them? Do you sit there and, you know, have somebody, like, there's times that I'll start as management, we'll get an agent, and, you know, as much as I say, look, you're not at the point that you need an agent yet, but if that's what you want, I'll get them an agent. And then they'll realize there's not much I can do for them anymore because they haven't gotten enough underneath their belt for me to say, hey, yes, can I call up and say, hey, see my guy, you know, there. But at that point, the agents are already submitting them to most of the stuff in the Southeast. In LA and New York, it's a little bit different. In LA and New York, I literally could turn around and say, hey, my guy is with, you know, one of the top 10 agencies and I'd like to get them in the door. You know, can you reach out? And they'll sit there and say, oh, well, they're with Abrams. Yeah, sure. And they'll reach out to Abrams and they'll do it. Here, we don't have that set up quite yet because this is strictly my opinion. I look at New York and LA as mom and dad, and I look at Atlanta as the teenager. grown a lot. We know a lot. We're really good. We have amazing talent here that has yet to be discovered because Atlanta is just like, to them, it's still a secondary market. So we just have to work really, really hard to show them that we are just as mature and that we are capable of doing things on our own. So it's like you, when your mom and dad, when you were turning 18 and they were like, well, can I help you? Is this what you need? And you're like, let me try to do this. I understand. And we fight it sometimes. We say we're younger. We know things a little bit better. And we do on certain things because we're not afraid of the changes in the industry, whereas LA and New York are so set on the way that they have been doing things mm-hmm. that they don't realize that it's changing. But this is where you take it into the taping part. We do 90% of our auditions or more actually on tape. LA and New York, they were always in person. Now LA and New York are starting to accept tape, which wow. sounds funny as tape. It's really video.
For sure. We all say it. Yeah. Self-taping. Yeah, definitely. Well, I definitely want to ask you about that. But first, I want to ask you, from somebody who came from the Twin Cities and now lives in Chicago, I've been in Chicago for 6 years, I think, working in Chicago. We all hear about Atlanta. Everyone hears about Atlanta. I mean, it's like, you know, it's LA and New York, and then you hear Nashville, Atlanta, and Chicago. So what is going on in Atlanta? What happened to make it such a viable market? And what's going on now? Has that decreased or increased or stayed the same?
Well, our tax incentive.
Yeah.
That's what really made it attractive.
Sure.
We have a 30% tax incentive, which is very, very high. We have one of the, or I think Pinewood might even be the largest studio in the US right now. Have you ever heard of Pinewood Studios?
No.
Okay. Pinewood Studios, it's in Fayetteville. It originated in the UK. It is the studio that Star Wars and James Bond and all that were filmed in the UK. Well, they were looking for a place to come to the US and they wound up selecting Georgia, Fayetteville. And they built a big, beautiful, beautiful studio here. And it's gorgeous. And it does all of the Marvel movies and it does all of the big box, you know, big studio projects. And it is here for the long haul. And it is probably one of the bigger reasons why the 30% tax credit will hopefully stay active, as well as the, do you know who the Cathy family is?
No.
They own Chick-fil-A. That's the okay. Chick-fil-A family. They're very involved in the entertainment industry here as well. So the tax incentive is what brought it. The Georgia Film Commission does a really good job trying to make sure that it stays here. It has generated $9.5 billion during 2018.
That's a decent amount.
Yeah, just a little. And $2.7 billion of it is direct spending, meaning that they literally are spending that money in hotels, restaurants, you know, tourism things, you know, the Georgia Aquarium and stuff like that. So it's just been, you see that kind of thing. They're doing whatever they can to keep them coming here.
Sure.
So, yeah. And our facilities, we have Third Rail Studios. We have, I think it's Raleigh Studios. We have another studio. There's so many studios popping up right now.
I've heard that.
Still can't keep up with everything that's filming here. I mean, there's like everything is booked all over the place.
So how many TV shows are we talking in Atlanta right now?
TV shows, I'm not sure because we're during network pilot season, but yeah. We did last year alone, we did 455 movies here. That's not counting the independents that don't kind of get recorded.
Wow.
Yes.
And
you've got your Walking Dead, which everybody knows about. You've got The Resident. You've got the new spinoff of The Originals, which is Legacies. You've got, not that this is in Georgia, but you've got Queen of the South, which is in New Orleans. You've got Mr. Mercedes, which is in South Carolina. You've got, oh gosh, there's so many more, and I just can't think of the list right now, but there's quite a few. And then there's a bunch of pilots that are coming.
Sure.
Here.
Yeah.
And this year's been pretty good for pilots. And pilot season has drastically changed over the years. It's really network pilot season because it's mostly networks that are shooting pilots. All the streaming services and everything, they do that year round. A good project comes to them, they're like, okay, let's go shoot a pilot for it.
So you said that 90% of auditions are tapes. Can you tell me, so how does that work? So yeah, just like walk me through that.
Okay. There's a few things that most actors should know. There is a service called Actors Access, which is where they put their profiles up. And our side of it is called Breakdown Services. And it is just that. They give us the breakdowns And then we look at the breakdowns, we see what the characters are, we decide that this particular actor fits that character, we submit them through this online process, the casting director gets them, they look through them, they know their directors, their producers, their whole creative team, and they know their show. So they'll look through it and they'll select, let's say, out of 2,000 submissions for a particular role, and they do get that many. They'll pick, depending on the casting director, and I can't say this from their side, but 30 to 50 people that they'll sit there and say, hey, you know, we want an audition from this actor. And they send you an email of a C-mail is what it's called, of the actors they want to see put on tape for that particular character. And it is called an EcoCast. Mm-hmm. So what happens is we get it, or the agent gets it, and they send it to the actor and they say, we need this on tape. Here's your sides. Here's when it's due by. And then they have to tape it. Taping is the critical part of the actor's job, other than their standard make the character right, know your lines, make a presentation of who it is. They have to make sure if they have to be well lit. We have to see their eyes and their whole face and their expressions, because sometimes there's no lines and the expressions are the key to it. The sound has to be crystal clear. It can't be a mic that keeps hitting something or the mic that's on the camera that's too far away. The backdrop needs to be a good solid backdrop of a neutral color of some kind. And it depends on your skin tone. It depends on how your lighting is. Sometimes the beige background works fine. Sometimes a gray background works better. Dark backgrounds tend to be too much. You kind of blend into them, especially if you have dark hair. Movement is another key. The people that first start taping think that they have this tiny little box that they have to do it in, and they don't move. So as much as they want to move because they want to be, you know, display the character in its environment, they don't move because they're afraid they're going to go out of camera view. So knowing the comfort of being able to move is a big key too, because when you're in the scene, you're going to move. So, but your lighting and your sound, your steadiness, never hold a camera. Make sure you have a tripod. Even if it's a cell phone and you make sure the cell phone is horizontal, they make special clips for tripods now for your cell phones, especially with the pixels that a cell phone can do now. Very few people go and buy a camera anymore because their phones are good enough to do. So those are their keys to doing it. Getting it in on time is another key. Mm-hmm. Don't think that, oh, well, if I'm an hour late, it's no big deal. Because most casting directors are so busy, they're watching them as they come in. So, you know, you're giving yourself a chance of being on the bottom of the barrel, because they could turn around and say, oh my God, this guy's good, this guy's good, this guy's good. By the time they get to you, they've already had 30 people. So you better blow it out of the water in order to, you know, and I'm just saying, this is my opinion. I'm not a casting director. They would be able to explain the process a lot better than me. But this is what I know from my side. Now, once they see them, it depends on the production and the whole team. Are they going to book it off of tape, which most of the roles here book off tape?
Really?
Yeah. Or if it's a bigger role, like a strong recurring guest star or series regular, they're going to have a callback. And at that point in time, in my opinion, as a manager, I will tell my actor, you are getting on a plane if you're not local and you are going live. Sometimes you can't help that because they might already be on set. So then you can turn around and say, hey, look, my guy's on set tomorrow. He's scheduled to shoot from this time to this time. Is there any way that we can do a Skype callback? Sometimes they can, sometimes they can't. Sometimes they'll say, you know what, we'll just use the tape that we have, because obviously they like the tape they had or they wouldn't do a callback for him. So there's so many variables involved in that process, but they do most of the booking for the day players or the co-stars, so to speak, are done off tape.
Why?
Because you get to see more people.
Huh.
When you go live, think about it. You might be able to see 100 people because that's all you can fit in the day. And I love live auditions. I would love for my actors to go to live auditions. It's great. But from a production standpoint and a creativity standpoint, you get to see more if you do video.
Hmm.
So, because you can watch them any time of day.
Yeah. No, yeah, it makes sense. So are your actors sending you the auditions and then you send them off to the casting director, or do they send them straight to the casting director?
They never send them straight to the casting. It always goes to the agent or manager first.
We
look at it. And, you know, I'll look at it sometimes if I have time and I think that they might need to correct sound or lighting, or I think that I would like another take because I would like to see a little bit of something different in the audition. I'll contact the actor and I'll say, hey, look, I like what you did. I happen to know this show really, really well. And can you just give me a little bit more of this? I won't tell them what to do because they need to use their creativity to create the characters. But I'll tell them the pace is a little bit faster, or they want someone that's a little bit goofier for the show. You know, my big thing is I try to tell my actors, never do an audition till you watch at least one episode of the show. Because you can't possibly watch every single show that's out there. And we don't all like every single show that's out there, you know? So I think it's very important to research, 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 research. If it's a brand new pilot, research the writer, research the director, research the producer. You'll understand the way that they do it. Chuck Lorre, he has a certain way of doing things. His paces are a certain way. So if you're doing an audition for a pilot for him, no, watch some of his shows, understand what he does, and be at the ready. Don't just think, oh, well, it's a sitcom, I'll just go do this. Because not every sitcom's the same, you know? So research is vital, especially when you're doing a video audition, because you're not getting the luxury of the casting director being in the room with you to say, look, that was good, but this show's a little bit faster pace. Can we speed it up a little bit on the next take? You don't have that luxury. So, and even if you were going live, you should still research the show so that you're there and you're ready and you know who the characters are. Are you going to be in a scene with one of the leads, or are you just going to be in a scene with another co-star that's just laying the foundation for something? So it's all very, very important to research and understand what is going on in the show. And it's hard with films, but again, understand the writer, the director, and what it is that they look for. But you have to bring part of yourself there. You have to have a vision, and you have to have enough confidence in your vision to not worry about, well, will the casting director like this? What is the casting director? What is the director looking for? What is the producer looking for? And I know that sounds counter to what I just said about understanding it, but you have to put the two together, because you have to understand, I'm creating this character. I have this vision, but I understand the pace that this director likes. And I understand this writer's quirkiness. That doesn't stop me from my, he wants me to bring something to the table. He doesn't want me to emulate everything he's done, but he wants me to understand what he's done so that I am giving him with my vision what it is he's looking for and what I feel the character is.
So I want you to think about two actors that you represent right now, and don't tell me their names, but one is an actor that you, when there's an audition, you were like, yes, this person always delivers, and you just submit them for like anything. And then you've got another actor where you're like, I don't know about this one. What is the difference between those two? What is actor A submitting as opposed to the other?
That's hard, because this sounds like, I don't know how this sounds, but I can tell you that I don't really have an actor that I dread their audition coming in, because I wouldn't continue to rep them, or I would not have signed them.
Makes sense.
The actor that I can sit there, here's a better scenario. There are certain actors that I know, because they're more experienced, that when I'm going to get their audition, it's probably not going to take me a long time, and I probably won't have to go back to them because of their experience level. There's others where they'll give me something and it'll be good, but because of their lack of experience and understanding, I might have to tweak them a little bit and go back to them and say, hey, this is good, but like I was saying before, I would like a second take. Can you give me more emotion? Can you give me a snide attitude? You know, can you give me this? Only because of their lack of experience and sometimes lack of confidence in, well, do you think the casting director will like that? Doesn't matter. If you feel good in it and we understand together that this is a good alternate to give them, even if it doesn't fit the character, it shows your range and shows your confidence in giving them what you feel is the character. And I try to talk to them. Do you really think this is what the character would do? And they're like, well, not really. Well, then give me what you think the character would do. Well, I was giving you what I think the casting director wants. No, give me what you think the character will do. We can give them the standard one, but we also want to give them the alternate of what you want to bring to the table for this character. And that's really your biggest thing with going with, here's my actors that I know they're going to give me aces. And here's the ones that I'm like, okay, let's really study this. Let's really, and I'll sometimes, if it's a role that I know might be a little stretch for an actor, I'll do a phone conversation with them beforehand. Or if it's a series regular role, let's say, I don't care how experienced you are, I will make a suggestion for them to get some coaching. because I don't have your A-listers where they're calling me and saying, hey, we want to book this person on the role. I have actors that still have to audition and show them that they're worthy. Like I have, you know, series regular, but they're not to the point of, oh, I know that they can do everything in the world. They're still to the point of having to prove themselves. And that's what an audition does. It proves that you're able to handle this, you know, and that's what your reel does. And that's another case in point. You know that you have this actor that's solid and has a good reel because they've done so much work. And then you have this other actor that has maybe two independent projects and that's all they have. So you have to anticipate that you might have to work with them on their audition a little bit. So I don't really have anybody where I'm like, oh my God, I dread getting this because I just wouldn't keep them. Mm-hmm. You know, and I know that sounds cold, but it's just, it's not fair to them. It's not fair to me. And it's not fair to casting because I'm not going to keep pushing them in casting and find out that they're still continuously not giving good auditions because it's a waste of everybody's time.
Right. I have so many questions for you. I want to ask you about reels. What is the importance of reels in Atlanta?
Reels are important anywhere.
Okay.
It doesn't matter where you are.
Okay.
Reels are important because, like we were talking before, the young woman that really never did comedy and never had a straight out comedic role, we had to try to get these clips together for a quick reel to show that, okay, we want her to audition, look at what she has done. And that those weren't even comedy. They were just funny spots within the other projects that she did. The reels are so valuable to selling you, to the point that if a casting director really likes you and they get to put the reel in that shows like you're going in for a lead detective and you've got a reel that shows that you have been a cop on 5 or 6 major shows or strong episodes, you know, movies or TV or whatever, they're going to look at you and they're going to say, okay, he did a really great job here. He's got a reel full of them. This guy knows what he's doing. He's going to make sure he gets on set. He's going to know what he's doing on set. And he's not going to cost us 5, 6, 7 reshoots because he knows what he's doing. Mm-hmm. So your reels are important. They don't have to be long. The first beginning reels don't have to have all this major work on it. They just have to show, they have to be good quality, clear, put together by a professional because people think they can make their own reels. They don't understand how flow makes it quicker and easier for casting to look at their reels and follow the characters they've done. A lot of people, when they do their own reels, they think they're editing a movie and they leave too much of other people and other things in the reel that don't matter. The reel is a spotlight of your work and thereby the focus should be your scenes. Yes, is it important to show that you were with a Tom Cruise in a scene and you handled yourself? Yes. But if you're in that kind of a scene, it's going to be focused on you. He's just going to happen to be in the scene with you to show that you handled the scene with him. But so reels are important. It's a catch-22. How do I get a reel if nobody's booking me? Well, that's where your creative nature comes in. Start reaching out there and accepting the fact that you're going to have to do some free shorts, some student films, some projects for friends, and make sure you get the clips and make sure they're quality work. They don't expect you coming in as an actor to be giving them a list reel with big actors. They know you have to start somewhere, but if they see that you're giving them a good quality reel because you were being professional, got it done professionally, did some good quality shorts and no pay projects, and kept those scenes to flow, they're going to say, okay, they're building their reel. They are out there doing what they need to do. Even if they're not getting paid for it, they're honing their craft by working and taking classes. Classes are very important. People think, oh, I can just be an actor and just start doing friend shorts and stuff like this. Training is so vital to your success. And there's big actors that get training. It might be in certain instances where they're getting movement training, but like there's actors that when they're going into a character, like a singing character, and they've never sung, they're going to get training on how to sing, how to move when they're singing and everything else. And they're making $2, 3, 4 million a project. So training is so vital and finding good quality training. Now you can get to a point where you did your improv and you did your scene study and you did all these things. And now you've been working for a bit and you're steadily working. So then you get coaching, you know, you get to the point where, you know, hey, I need to get up on stage and get in front of improv, or, hey, this is a bigger role. I've never played this kind of a character. Let me get coaching to do it. And there's nothing wrong with that. It's smart, mm-hmm. you know? So reels are a key, but so is training.
So I don't have a reel. I made a reel years ago, and it was made up largely of independent projects that I did. And now what I have on my IMDb as well as Actors Access is just clips. So I have like scenes from the network shows that I've done, as well as I think I have a commercial example on my IMDb. Is that okay just to have clips? Or
oh yeah,
that's
clips
okay.
Are fine. You should. It's been so back and forth with that. First it was reels, and then, you know, you're talking going through 2 minutes of it to try to find the scenes that best support the role that you're going for. And then it was, give me clips so that I can just select the clips that match the character that you're going out for. Hmm. Now it's kind of, they realize it's a combination of both. For me personally, on Breakdown Services, which is my side, I prefer clips because I can be selective in saying, you played a cop on these three, and you're going in for a cop. When it comes to uploading your audition, after you get the audition, I have a copy of everybody's reel on one of my cloud drives. So I just upload it with the audition so they can see a variety of your work to show to the creative team instead of just the clips of your cop. So to me, both are beneficial.
Laureen, before we continue, I want to ask you, where would you like people to be able to connect with you, or social media, website, stuff like that?
We have a website, which is rcmtalent.com. We have a Facebook page, which they can send me messages via that. The website pretty much tells you if you want to get in touch with us. It has all the information. It's very minimal because it doesn't need to be. I'm not going to put all my actors up there. First of all, it's too much maintenance. And secondly, it hits the pertinent marks. It has my Facebook feed, my Twitter feed. It has how you get in touch with me. And that's really all it needs to have. We are on Twitter. I prefer either a Facebook message or going to the website and following the contact information on the website
okay.
to do it. There's also, on occasion, there's this, I guess you'd call it an app, website app. It's called We Audition.
Yeah.
And I do guest spots on that too, where I get to talk one-on-one with you. And it also gives you the ability to get in touch with me after I have those.
Yeah, Darren Darnborough. I've had him on this podcast before.
Yeah, he's great. I actually rep him as an actor.
Yeah, he's awesome. He's super cool. I love that dude. So I want to continue. So you said that clips, okay, that's super interesting. Like clips are that's interesting. Okay, so it goes both ways. When it comes to agencies in Atlanta, are they generally willing to rep outside talent, non-local hires?
It was probably a greater acceptance a couple of years ago. I don't think it is as great now because casting wants you to be local because they are supporting the local market. And, you know, anybody that is in a particular market wants to support their own people. Mm-hmm. So if I had a choice between, and sometimes they don't know because, you know, people aren't very upfront about it at times, but that's why they're asking more and more, where is your actor based? Because if they know, especially with sometimes the turnarounds right now, where your audition comes in, it's due on Monday, they make the decision on Tuesday, and you need to be traveling on Wednesday. Not everybody can do that. So, you know, there's a lot of good talent here in the Southeast, and the casting directors justifiably try to support their actors that are in the region. Okay. And there's a lot of that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So back on to the locals. So, you know, if you have local ties, they're a little bit more open. Like you originated here and you still have family here. Or, you know, if you're willing to relocate here, or you understand that, you know, it could cost you $600 to get a ticket here because you're doing it at the last minute. Mm-hmm. You have to be willing to not back down. And that's why it's becoming a little less of a, hey, yeah, I'll rep you in the Southeast, even though you're in LA. Mm-hmm. You know, I rep a lot of people in LA and I rep people in New York, like I said, and I rep people, you know, in various different areas. they understand that is one of the things that we are very, very clear on when I sign them on. Understand, if you commit to being here for something and you give me any reason other than a valid, super, super valid, I don't want to hear it was too expensive. I didn't realize it would be so expensive.
Now, are you talking about jobs or callbacks? Both.
Both, for the most part. If you're making it to a callback, and you want to show me that you're professional and you want to show casting, you better try to get here for the callback unless it isn't feasible because you're either on set or if you're going to be traveling here and it's a two-line role, which rarely gets a callback. I don't even know if they ever get a callback for a two-line role. But even like commercials, sometimes I had an instant where they accepted tape for the beginning of the commercial, which is kind of a new thing now because you used to have to always be live for a commercial. And the callback was supposed to be live, but when they scheduled the callback, he was already going to be on set. So they did a Skype and he booked it from the Skype because he did a really good job. But for the most part, if you've made the commitment to decide to be a local hire here, then you need to understand the cost of what it's going to be here. And you have to understand that if casting knows you're not here, they're probably not going to be looking at you because there's too much of a chance of you not being able to get in here after going through the whole entire approval process. That's why it's less likely for them to start to continue to take people outside the market. Did that make any sense to you?
Yeah, totally. Totally.
And we even get notifications on the breakdown that say, do not submit anybody in LA or New York. Because 9 out of 10 times, the casting director is going to see the people in LA and New York for if those roles are being cast out of there.
For sure. Yeah. So, okay. So that brings me to two different points. The first one is when it comes to Atlanta, like in Chicago, where I am, they are booking most of the big roles out of LA or New York. And it's for Chicago, they're booking guest stars. I booked a recurring role on a network show. And I got told by like 3 or 4 people before I booked it, expect to not get this because they're going to try as hard as they can to book it out of LA or New York. And then when I actually did book it, the director was like, I had to fight on this one because the network wanted me to book it out of New York or LA, like really bad. Is
How long ago was that?
That one was like 3 years ago.
Yeah. The mentality is very different now.
It is. Okay, great.
Yeah. It is there even to the point of seeking series regulars. They'll look locally first to see if they can find them. And if they can't find them, then they'll go to the bigger markets.
Why?
Not for every show, but it's beginning to give that opportunity to the locals because realizing that not everybody hops on a plane to move to LA or New York anymore. So you're getting more and more opportunities for the recurring guest stars and for the series regulars or the guest stars locally. Like there's been times where I've had an actor in LA that I thought was great for a role and I'll call the casting director, the lead casting in LA and say, hey, are you guys seeing this role out there? Because I'd love to have my guy come in. And they'll be like, well, we're looking local first. If we can't find it there, then we're going to look for it here.
That's great news.
Yeah, it is really good news. And there's a couple of pilot projects where they're actually, you know, now you have to understand something when it comes to series regulars, 9 out of 10 times, they already know who they want to cast that are names that are going to make people watch the show, but they have to leave their doors open in case the negotiations don't work or for some reason, this newbie, which isn't always a newbie, even though they say they're overnight successes, they've been doing it for 10 years.
Yeah.
This newbie just hits the mark so incredibly and they had not found the name to fill that role yet. So it's, you know, you have to go into the series regular understanding that chances are you're going up against people with big names for it as well. You know, but that doesn't blow it out of the water. Be professional, get your job done, know your lines, have a good audition, be at the ready, understand the character, the director and everything. And, you know, it happens.
So for somebody who wants to be represented in Atlanta and they are able to travel for callbacks, what is it that they should do in order to make it so that the casting is willing to look at them, even though they don't live there?
They have to understand that they have to be a 100% local hire. They are going to have to pay their way. They are going to have to pay for their hotel. They are going to have to pay for their car rental. They're going to have to understand that your role might work Monday and then Thursday. So now you've got to put yourself up from Sunday all the way through to Friday. Mm. And you have to really like casting. If you do a really good job and they understand that you can get here in a split second and you have that reputation, you're going to get it if you're perfect for the role, you know. But you have to be willing and you have to analyze it. Think about it. I'm getting $1,800 for the 2 days, let's say, okay, because they're split days, they're split weeks. So I'm getting $1,800. Well, it's going to cost me $500 to $600 in a ticket. It's going to cost me $300 in hotel. It's going to cost me another $300 in a car rental. Is it worth it?
Right.
Or do I try to continue to find work where I am locally? Now, if it's a recurring guest star, or, you know, a very strong guest star that's going to work 5 days and get a weekly and it makes sense, then I mean, you have to analyze all, but that's totally off what your question was, by the way. Your question was, how do you make the casting director want to hire you? Like you do everything else, every other audition, you do the best job you can do and you make sure that it's clear that you understand you're going to be a local hire.
Yeah.
Because bottom line is they're going to cast the best person for the role. Or at least that's your hopes. And most of them do that.
In general, would you say that when you represent people who are non-residents of Atlanta, does it work out for them? Or do they think it's going to work and then it doesn't? Meaning, do they realize, you know what, the cost is too great. I can't make it to the callbacks and so forth.
For me, I haven't had that issue. I've been very fortunate. And as a manager, I get to be a little bit more, I have less people because you spend more time with each of them. And most of my people understand it from the get-go that this is going to be the expense and I am not going to put you in for a role that isn't going to make sense. Mm. But there are times that, and I can't speak for other agents, but there are times that people don't realize the expense and then they really sit there and say, you know what, I can't do this anymore, you know? Mm-hmm. And some people just, you know, for the very, very beginner, and this is, again, just my opinion, for the very, very beginner who is just not booking things in the area they're in, but they do have the ability, it's just that the competition is excessively high, especially in LA and New York, and this is the only way they're going to get experience, they have to either understand that it's going to cost them, and they can consider it marketing dollars and training dollars. You know, I'm going to get there and I'm going to either break even or it's going to cost me a couple hundred dollars. I can only do that twice a year, but it gets my resume to a point of having something on it and maybe I can start to work local. Or they have to sit there and say, do I have to consider a move to a market that's going to give me more opportunities? Mm-hmm. If this is the career and the profession I want, what do I need to do from a professional standpoint for this career? Do I have to, LA is not making it for me. It's very expensive. Atlanta is giving me, it has amazing opportunities for the level of the roles that I am ready for. Should I move there? You know, there's a ton of people leaving LA and coming here because it's A, very expensive in LA. And B, our pool, as great as it is still not as big as LA. Mm-hmm. So you become a medium fish in the pond instead of a small fish in the pond. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And that's where management really comes in, laying down and saying, what are my best options? The ultimate decision is always the actor's. Your job as an agent and a manager, mostly as a manager, is to sit there and lay it down and say, hey, you want this. This is how it's been going for the last 6 to 8 months. This is just, you know, you're not getting the bites. Is it your headshots? Is it your reel? Is it that, you know, you haven't been available enough? Is it that you're just, you know, they want a local person for this role? Mm-hmm. You know, you might consider like, hey, maybe I should go to Atlanta for 3 months and try and see if that makes a vast difference. There's just so many factors involved in your career decisions and you know, the expenses of it. Do I stay out of the state and come in? I mean, I book a lot of people outside of Atlanta on roles. You know, I support the Atlanta actor. I do whatever I can. I would love to be on panels. I love to try to help them, even if they're not my actors, if they're friends of friends that ask me questions, because I would love to build the Southeast into an amazing market that it already is, but build it even more. But I also love working across the board. I love working with my actors in LA and the casting directors in LA and productions in LA. I love working with New York and, you know, working with the different casting directors and agencies up there. Just because I'm Atlanta based doesn't mean I can't support everybody in the areas they're in, including my, you know, my couple of Texas people and things like that. So it's a matter of where you want your career to go, what you're willing to do for it. I mean, people used to pack up their families and move to LA because this is the career they wanted. Now they can pack their bags and go to Atlanta, which is a lot less expensive and has great opportunities. Mm-hmm. I totally got off track on that. I told you that I can just go and go and go.
No, I'm so interested in all this. When you do start to represent a new actor and they are already represented by an agency, mm-hmm. Is there ever, what is the conversation like? Do you talk to the agent? How does that work?
It seriously depends on the agents. It really does, especially in the Southeast. Some of the agents have not cottoned up to managers. Others are wonderful to work with. I will talk to them and say, hey, I just wanted you to know that, you know, I just signed your actor onto a management contract. I will be sure to CC you on all conversations and work together as a team. And I'll let you know the goals that we have. And so, and you know, they're so receptive. They're like, oh my God, great. And, you know, and there's a couple of agents that because they've worked great, they have actually recommended their actors to me for management because they feel like, okay, we're getting this path. We need somebody that can really take us to the next level and do all of the marketing and do all, you know, the different PRs and get us to that level. So that works really great because I've already started working with them, you know, and then there's some that, you know, they don't get it and they don't want to have those conversations. So you just do the best you can. It's not, there's no like rift or anything. It just lacks some communications. I make sure that they get CC'd on everything and anything that I do. You know, there's just minimal conversation because they just, you know, they don't understand. They think that we're just glorified agents and we're doing exactly what they're doing. Mm. When it comes to LA and New York, it's a whole different ballgame. I've never had any agent there not include me in every single thing and want to talk to me. And actually, it gets to the point where the actor doesn't talk to the agent anymore. The agent talks to me, who in turn talks to the actor, because the actor and I are the ones that make the ultimate decision of where we want to go with the projects that were being offered by the agent. You know, they do their initial meeting and all that other stuff and sign their contracts. But then after that point, it's the agent and I, which is why it's so vital for the agent and the manager to have a good communications, because in general, the talent doesn't have the communications with the agent anymore because they have too many people. They can't have those conversations with every single actor they have because they're so busy with the submission process. Mm. And so it comes to the point of us discussing things. So it's all a learning and growing process. Mm-hmm. So I've never had any, like I said, I've never had any where there's been, you know, animosity or anything like that. It's just been a lesser communications. Mm-hmm.
So you've been an agent and now you're a manager. What are some of the most common mistakes that you see actors make in pursuing a career in this industry?
I don't really like the word mistake. Some of the less informed or less experienced things that they do. Because it's not a mistake if you don't know that what you're doing isn't the right way to do it. So education is your big thing. You know, like sitting there and sending in, like, you want me to represent you. And what you send to me, I can't even see because the video is so dark. I can't even judge anything because I can't see who you are. Sending an email to me that says, I'm the next this, 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 and this. You know, it's great to try to convey you have confidence, but I don't need you to be the next Johnny Depp. I need you to be you.
Do people say that?
I need you to be, hey, I can bring this to the table. I have this experience. I've done this. Professionalism is the biggest key for me. It's the biggest key. Don't tell me that you're going to walk onto my roster and you're going to start booking series regular roles when you haven't even done a mainstream co-star. Mm. And don't come to me and tell me that you don't want to go out for anything except for bigger roles when you have never even done a single television or known film. Independent films are great. I love them. I think they are the biggest. I love independent films more than, there's a place for studio movies and there's a place for independent. And it all depends on what you're in the mood for. But don't come to me when the projects you've done have never even been in festivals or been released anywhere and then tell me that you are a series regular caliber or a lead caliber. You're not being realistic. That to me is, I know they're doing it to try to show their confidence at times, but I don't need that confidence. I need you just to sit there and say to me, I'm dedicated. I've been taking classes. I've been working on it. I've done these independent projects, these short films, and I need somebody that will, you know, take me to the professional level, which that's another word that people use, don't use properly. Because if you're out there, and I use professional a lot, if you are out there taking your classes, doing those short films, doing your research, you are a professional, even if you've never had a big name job, or if you've never been on a known project, you're still a professional if you're going about it the right way. If, like I said, you're taking your classes, you're understanding what a reel is like, you're reading books, you're going and doing these short films to understand, you know, because there's a major difference between doing a short film and doing an actual TV series. Mm-hmm. Because TV series move really, really fast. Short films, you think, well, we move fast. We did it all in a weekend. Yeah, they do move fast, but get on the set of a TV series. You know, and I'm only saying that. I have never done either. I'm just saying that for my actors who turn around and said, oh my God, I thought I moved so fast on that short film we had to have done in 48 hours. This TV show was like lightning, and everybody that on the set was like a well-oiled machine and knew where to go and what to do and how to do it. And there were 50,000 people instead of five, you know, right. It's a beautiful awakening.
Right.
But so I don't know, like I said, I don't know if I would call them mistakes as much as understanding the industry and experience and getting to realize, you know, I don't have to be that overly confident person. I don't have to sit there and say, hey, I know I can do it all. People understand where I'm coming from. I'm new. I'm just learning. And, you know, they want to mentor me and guide me. And I don't have to walk in there and say, I'm your next big star.
If you like this podcast, please go to your podcast app, scroll down, and give me a rating or a review. Thank you for listening.